All right, what do you got on your list of things to discuss?
So the first one I got was one I just read about yesterday. I don't here in the wilds of Africa, I don't stay up with all the news items very regularly, but yesterday I decided to look in and find some little quirky things. And have you heard about this flight attendant?
That was one of mine. Yeah, I did hear about that.
I thought we might both have this one, so I don't know what we get. But so apparently this flight attendant, the plane had landed, and the flight attendant had gotten over the intercom and said, please don't, you know, undo your safety belt or remove anything from the overhead bin until we are safely, you know, docked at the gate. But then this guy gets out of his seat and he opens up the overhead bin, and the flight attendant goes to, like, you know, tell him to put it back and you know, help him put the thing back. But when he does this, the guy, the bag somehow, probably depending on who you ask who what happened, but the bag somehow, like, hits the flight attendant on the head. And the flight attendant, you know, says to the guy, hey, you should apologize to me for him. And the guy curses him out instead. And so the flight attendant goes, gets over the intercom, curses out the guy who just, you know, whose bag just hit him in the head, says, thank you, I've been doing this for something like 20 years and that's enough, grabs a beer out of the beverage cart and pulls the emergency slide and jumps onto it and leaves. And then he gets arrested a few hours later. But I just thought that was quite an interesting story. Your thoughts?
No, it's definitely classic. And you know, like, that, I don't know if that really, his reaction really was, a you know, commensurate with the grievance that he was, you know, I mean, like, okay, no, you know, it's a passenger and he got hit in the head, but I mean, like, I don't know if the reaction was really on the par of what happened to him, but it's a good way to go out. And like, to grab the beer is like the ultimate, you know, like,
I think I agree to some respect, but on the reaction not being commensurate, I think very much so. Like it I mean, it's very much not the appropriate reaction given the thing. Now, obviously, he had been sort of hating his job for a little bit of time, you know, and it had sort of built up, you know. I mean, I have a feeling he was not, you know, incredibly happy with work that day, and then suddenly, you know, and then suddenly this bad thing happens and he's just like, I quit. But I think that, you know, it was probably a buildup of things, and I mean, you know, the thing is that he's kind of become this hero on the internet for, like, you know, people who really want to say screw you to your job when you quit and that sort of thing. And I think this is me being boring and responsible, but it's like, well, you inconvenienced a lot of people, you know, and I know, you know, that was rough to get hit in the head with a baggage thing, and then the guy doesn't apologize or anything. That's terrible. But when you quit your job, I mean, it's better than, you know, shooting a lot of people, which is what some people kind of do. But when they get fed up with things, but I think, I don't know, there's got to be ways of addressing grievances and that sort of thing before they reach the boiling point, or just quitting. I really do like the take the beer thing.
Yeah.
I don't know about the whole pop the emergency slide and you know, inconvenience 100 people.
Maybe he figured it was his only chance.
That's true.
It's like, when are you ever going to go down an emergency slide, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe it was sort of a grab for internet fame. Maybe he knew someone would be reporting about this sort of thing. But I don't know. I mean, what do you think about that? Like, sort of the buildup of steam.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's like, life is like stressful, right? I mean, like everything is, there's always something to sort of like push you over the edge, you know? If it's like maybe you drive to work every day and like now you just can't take it anymore or whatever. I guess that's just the thing, right? I can't take anymore. I don't know. I mean, that's just sort of like.
Yeah, I think if you're, I don't think it's, you know, if you find driving to work every day frustrating, that is going to be what pushes you over the edge. I think it's always there's more stuff. You know,
exactly, right? And it's like, so you can't really blame the passenger on him, because every flight I've been on, like some idiot gets up early and tries to like get his stuff out,
right?
You know, yeah. It's not only that, but it's like way worse in other countries. Like, you know, like you could fly on United and you fly into Southeast Asia or like India or a place like that where people, they don't really have concept of lines anyway. And right. It's just like, it's just a madhouse. Like, boom, the minute the plane's down, people are up in the aisles.
Yeah.
Let alone when, like, you're taxiing at, like, a normal speed, right?
Yeah.
People are up and they're constantly like...
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. People are up and they're constantly like, please sit down. We're not even on we're not even off the runway yet, you know, let alone taxiing. Yeah. Like, could you just sit down, you know?
The concept of the line is definitely a Western concept, I think, you know, it's of lining up there. I remember being in the airport in Kathmandu, and I had my bags and several bags of people that I was traveling with, and putting them on a machine that like sent them through the X-ray sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I had all these bags on a cart, and I push the cart up to the side of a machine and start. Oh, but the machine wasn't running yet, so I sort of had to wait a while, but I start like kind of unloading them. And at first I was the only person there, so it wasn't a problem. But then other people start coming in with their carts, the bags, and they just surround my cart. Like my cart cannot go anywhere now. And I've got all the bags off onto the thing. But then I remember this one lady in particular. She's just sort of pushing her cart into my cart and saying, move, please. Move, please. And I'm like, lady, where can I go? There's 50 carts surrounding me now. And in the end, I had to, like, because, I mean, basically I had to pull one of these, well, I'm the tallest man in the room sorts of things.
Right,
and I lift the cart up over my head and start picking spots to place my feet, you know, out through all these people. But it was like, really? We haven't gotten a line? This is ridiculous.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I've been in situations like that, too, and I'm generally the tallest person also, and I'll just kind of glare at somebody, you know, and they'll get it. Like, and, like, maybe they'll just, like, realize that, like, I'm not the kind of person that doesn't like a line, and you're going to wait in line behind me. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's like, yeah, like, move, please. It's like, really? And this is exactly where I'm going to lose it right now, you know? And, like, I can choose not to lose it, or I can be like, I'm just going to, you know, like, I can understand how you can be speechless, especially when it's like, hey, stop it. And then she's like, move, please. It's like, what are you talking about?
Where can I move? Where can I move?
And then imagine if she ran over your foot with her cart, or like hit you in the head with her like thing, accidentally maybe. But it's like, I told you not to do that, and then you ran over my leg, you know? Mm-hmm. So then you just flip out, grab a beer, pop the door open, and slide on out.
Yeah. It's one of those things, though, where it's like there must be, you know, some cultural, you know, drawback. I mean, because, you know, there's somebody, there was someone else there who was, you know, Nepali or something in this situation, who thought, oh, this is just ridiculous. Why are we surrounding this guy? And now nobody's car can move. But there must be some sort of like cultural drawback to that guy stepping up and being like, hey, everybody, form a line. And I wasn't going to do it because, you know, I was clearly an outsider and I didn't want to be, you know, yelling at people, telling them what to do.
Right.
You know, so it was just it was funny. But
yeah, I don't know. It's like, I think it's just like too many people, you know, like maybe if there's not so many people, it's like, all right, we'll wait in line. No big deal. But I don't know. I'm sure this is like a – this must be a fun, like, segment of psychology, you know? Like, I don't know what people do. I mean, I'm sure there's all sorts of things people study in the field of psychology, but I wonder if, like, lines are, like, a whole department, you know?
It really ought to be. There ought to be some people doing their dissertations on what the hell the deal with making a line or not making a line is, you know? And I think, you know, it's one of those things where if there is a line and one person cheats or three people cheat, they'll get away with it.
Right.
But if there's no line, if there's just sort of a mob, then no one can really cheat because everybody's kind of cheating, you know? It's, I don't know.
It's similar to the sort of like traffic thing, right? Like when you have to merge or whatever and everybody's like zippering.
Right, yeah.
And then like one guy's just like, no, I'm not going to zipper. Like I'm just going to like get as far ahead as possible.
Like, yeah, and it's like, you jerk.
Like, well, okay, go ahead. I mean, you know, it's fine. But I mean, but you know, if everybody drove like you, we would be a lot less happy.
Yeah. Then we would all be pulling the emergency slide.
Yeah.
I think that's a new expression, though. I mean, oh, he pulled the emergency slide.
Maybe it'll replace going postal.
Yeah.
Did you hear about speaking of a workplace going postal, there was a beer like distributor in like somewhere in New England or something like that.
Who shot
people. Yeah. Just like went crazy and shot a bunch of people. I guess he was stealing beer apparently.
Okay.
But it sounds like there was a lot of weird details that like he was like the only minority in the entire office or something like that.
Yeah.
And he was like he said he was like, oh, he was being discriminated against, but he had never filed a grievance. But then it's like that's a weird sort of relationship, right? Like, I mean, have to report a grievance to your work. Like, I would just be like, you're annoying. I'm going to fire you. But then, of course, you can't because that's, right. like, the worst thing you can do as an employer. But then it's, like, it's like a very awkward relationship now.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, hopefully they have ideally they would have something like a human resources department that's independent of the, you know, of the sort of executive structure.
Right, right, right.
And so you could... I mean, I guess I don't really know. Like, at your company, does the human resources have any sort of check, like actual power over, managers and stuff like that, both of projects or even executives?
Well, not really. I mean, I think when it comes to staffing, is it like, you know, is this person going to be employed here or whatever? Like, they could really, I think they can say, you know, this person did something and our policy is this and they're gone. You know, like, I think actually my old company, apparently somebody brought a gun to work. True. But not like in a threatening manner at all. More like, oh, like I bought this gun, you know, or like, you know, he's a sportsman or something like that. So I don't know, some completely harmless way of bringing a gun, you know. I don't know what that is, but... You know, maybe you just bought a handgun and you want to go shoot at the range or something like that. And you wanted to bring in and show a coworker who was also a gun enthusiast or something like that. And I think he had it on the parking lot or something like that. And then somebody got word of it. And it's like the next day he was gone. Mm. And it's just like, I think everybody knew that it was harmless or whatever. But it's at the same time, it's like you just can't, like, this is a gigantic corporation. There's no, like, rule. There's no lines. I mean, there's no, like, sort of leeway. You know, like, maybe if it was a really small company, be like, hey, man, you really can't do that. It makes everybody uncomfortable. But when it's a really big company, it's like, no, you bought a gun. You brought it to work. You're not working here anymore. That's it. You're gone.
Yeah.
So, I think when it comes to that, they'll really yank people.
But what if that had been, you know, the CFO?
Yeah, I think he just would have been gone. Well, okay. Yeah, I mean, maybe when it gets that high up, there's a lot of, like, sort of, like, politics and stuff, but I think when it comes to the majority of people, like unless it's like the top six or seven people in the company, I think it's like, you know, you're gone, that's it.
Yeah, but that's a weird thing. It's like you've got this weird class structure built into your business. There are different rules that apply.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm just speculating also. I'm not really sure. It might be that if the CFO brought a gun in accidentally, then he'd be gone also, it might be. But you're totally right at the same time. It's like, you know, when you're at a big company, or even let's say you have a company of like 100 people or 200 people, and you see the CEO, like, you know, it's just this weird, like, sort of respect, you know? It's like, oh, hey, what's up? Or like, let's say, like at my company, it's like a couple thousand people now, and the CEO is on my floor, and let's say we were going into the bathroom. I would definitely, or the break room, or whatever it happens to be, I would definitely, like, oh, hey, I would hold the door open for him, you know, like sort of out of respect, not even intentionally, just like, oh, you're the CEO, oh my gosh, you know, like, how often do I see you? Not very often, and you're like, you know, a big wig kind of guy.
It's the king. Bow to the king.
Exactly, right? But, oh, like, you, no. He wouldn't ask you to do that, and he'd be nice about it and everything, but it'd be like kind of like this weird sort of, like, when you see him, you walk straighter, you know, you work harder.
But I mean, does the that's bad. But do the rules apply to the CEO or the CFO or the CTO?
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I have no idea. But if they didn't, you know, if for some reason they didn't, like, I just, like, I don't even know, but I speculated that they would get away with a little more. And it didn't really bother me either. Because for some reason, just like, it just felt natural that, like, yeah, all right, the CEO should get away with, not should get away with it, but I would be like, oh, yeah, like, I guess he could, like, do whatever he wants, or he could, like, you know, if he asked me to get a coffee, I would probably get him a coffee.
Right. Well, that's sort of the managerial hierarchy, right? But I feel like you want the same rules to apply to everyone. So if the CEO brings a gun to the parking lot to show the CFO, you know, like, sort of like, hey, look at my new, you know, laser scope that I got for my rifle, and that's against the rules, I feel like that, you know, the consequences have to be the same.
No, you're totally right. But for me, for some reason, it didn't occur to me that they would be the same. I think, like, it's almost like he sets the rules, right? When you're that high up,
yeah,
you get to set the rules, right? Because it's your company.
Well, you know, but the thing is, a lot of CEOs these days aren't, it's not their company.
You're right.
Might get, like, stock options as part of their pay deal or something, but they didn't start the company. They didn't, you know. But it's interesting. One of the things that I'm working on here in, you know, it's a very new business here, and so we're just developing a lot of things. One of them is the policy handbook, basically. The HR director is looking for people to help out design this sort of thing, and one of the things I was working on was just the reimbursement policy, and, like, you know, travel reimbursement and all that sort of thing. And one of the suggestions was, well, there should be different amounts of travel reimbursement and per diem and stuff for, like, different levels of seniority and employment.
Whoa.
And I was sort of like, I don't think so. Like, I just fundamentally disagree with that. You know, like, if you have a reimbursement policy, it should be the same for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, not like, oh, well, this guy, you know, because he is a level 1-3 manager or something, gets to fly to Nairobi, and this guy has to take a bus because he's, you know, whatever.
Well, it's weird, I guess, because, like, you know, like, at some point, the executives there, especially in a big company, I mean, not giving them any more worth than they deserve, I'm just saying, like, their time is just worth more than somebody whose job is not that. You know, it's like, if you're the CEO and you're running this gigantic company, you just have to be in a bunch of different places, you know, at the same time, and having a jet is the only way to get there. It sounds like this total, like, entitled, you know, like, thing to say, but at the same time, it's like, you know, you can't have more than one CEO, and maybe you have some executive officers to help you out, but at the same time, it's like, when you're leading a corporation that's so large, you just have to be in certain places, and maybe, you know, maybe it boils down kind of like to you guys also. It's like, when you're the person who's, like, you're the operational person for your entire country, let's just say, you know, so you have to be in these different cities day in, you know, like, one day you're here and one day you're here and one day you're here. And if you're wasting a day on the road, you're just not as effective.
Right. But I mean, I think in the case of something like, you know, a major corporation like Dolby or whatever, they would reimburse that travel. Right, for the CEO, but I mean, if there's work-related travel for anyone else, I think they would probably give them, you know, if you had to be in Tucson, they would fly you there.
Right. I guess maybe it's just a distinction in class and the way you get there. Like maybe, like I think the way I heard you saying it is like if one person, like maybe the head guy takes the plane there and then somebody else takes a bus there.
Yeah.
Like they'll send you to Nairobi, but you're just not going to get there quicker. Or you'll get there slower and it might cost you a little less.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that was the suggestion. But I mean, to say that, I don't know. This organization that I work for is very new, and the, you know, the hierarchy at this point really isn't there.
Right.
You
right.
know, there's but to say that, you know, one person has to be on a 8 or 9 or 10 hour bus ride, and another person takes a 1 hour flight. I don't know. I feel like it ought to be one or the other. You know. But that's just my feeling.
Yeah, I think it's tough. I think it's just, I guess it depends on, maybe it's something that like, it's a thing that could be in place, but I wouldn't put it in the manual, I guess. It would just become like a call situation, right? Like, let's say you have to be in Nairobi and then you're, you know, the guy three levels up, if there's even that much hierarchy at all, needs to be in Nairobi also. But then he needs to be in some other city the next day and you don't.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's like, so okay, like well,
buy,
yeah, it's like
sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like maybe we could just make a judgment call on that. And then, you know, but we won't make it like a policy that he gets to go comfortably and you don't.
Right. I can see that.